Hi, well, while I get those slides up, I just want to make one point. There's nothing sacred about the middle ground. The truth may not lie midway between the mainstream Democrats and mainstream Republicans. Certainly in 1960, mainstream Democrats and mainstream Republicans said that segregation was the law of the land and was going to continue, and the truth may be somewhere outside of that. And in fact, on this particular issue, the truth may lie with the 85 congressional Democrats who've endorsed single-payer health care by endorsing H.R. 676. Okay. Now, I want to tell some stories because Joyce told me to. The first story is about veterans. This appears in December APHA. It is available on the web. Turns out 6.7% of non-elderly veterans are uninsured in the United States. What's their story? They're working people. Now VA is means tested since early 2003. So these are working men and women. They earn too little to buy private coverage. They earn too much for means tested VA or for Medicaid. This is the same story as most of the 47 million uninsured Americans. Here's my next story, medical bankruptcies. There are nearly 1 million American adults in medical bankruptcy this year. You probably know this. It was covered in the papers when we published this in Health Affairs. You probably don't know what's on this slide. That is that more than three-quarters of people in medical bankruptcy in the United States had health insurance at the onset of the illness that bankrupted them. Most of them had private health insurance, and two different stories occurred. Either they got too sick, they lost their job, they lost their employment-related coverage, or in many cases, they held on to their private insurance throughout the illness that bankrupted them, but were bankrupted by gaps in their coverage like copayments, deductibles, and non-covered services. And the point is, it's not enough to simply offer people the kind of coverage that private coverage that many people now have. My third story, tremendous growth in administration and administrative costs. It's the number of administrators graphed on the top, number of physicians and their growth on the bottom. Again, tremendous administrative costs. The component of those administrative costs, a major one, is HMO overhead. These are the market leaders, most recent data available. Aetna was taking more than 20 cents of every dollar of premium for their own overhead profits and paperwork. Less than 80 cents on your healthcare dollar was going for doctors, nurses, medications, etc. Within our own Medicare program, many people are saying, why doesn't the government just administer Medicare through these private payers? Well, Medicare is doing that on the Part D drug plan. And look at those administrative costs on Medicare Part D. They tower over the administrative costs in traditional Medicare. Part of those administrative costs are the huge salaries that the HMO CEOs get. Bill McGuire, nearly $1.8 billion. My favorite is Jack Rowe. He's a former colleague of mine from Harvard. He earned about $500 million working for Aetna after he left Harvard. That salary represents $220,000. That is $220,000 per day for every day he worked for Aetna, including Sundays and holidays. Going to skip that. How are we doing? Well, what I think in terms of our healthcare system as a whole, this says it all. The life expectancy of Americans is 2 to 3 years shorter than life expectancy in many other developed nations. Now, we've talked a great deal in our own organization, Physicians for National Health Program, about a single-payer type system, a traditional Medicare for all type system. And these are the standards that they use for their single-payer system in Canada. There are other single-payer systems in other countries. But in Canada, there's a large federal matching grant if the province has a program that has universal coverage that does not impede reasonable access. And that's been no copayments, no deductibles for covered services. Portability from province to province, coverage for all medically necessary services, and a publicly administered nonprofit plan, both for equity and to generate administrative savings, which I'll talk about a little bit more. When we performed a meta-analysis looking at folks who had an illness and had coverage in Canada and the United States, we found that the quality of care, in a meta-analysis, the quality of care in Canada is at least as good as in the United States, and that there was a trend toward higher quality care within Canada. And you can find this on the Open Medicine website. Then we looked at the cost differences in the two countries, represented here as a giant pie. And it turns out that nearly half of the total cost difference between the United States and Canada is due to administrative costs. Now, those of you who can do the math in their head can say, well, that sounds like a larger number than what Karen was showing. And, of course, Karen showed you this data, insurance overhead, and this is in my slide on a per capita basis, insurance overhead. But the total potential administrative savings by going to a single-payer system include not only this insurance overhead, but the extremely high hospital billing and overhead costs related to collecting from literally thousands of different insurance plans and millions of different patients, and similarly doctors and clinics overhead costs for similar reasons. Now, the theme for my talk is not going to be from the Latin or Greek classics, but from The Who and their famous album, We Won't Get Fooled Again. And if you're turning to your neighbor and saying The Who, then you're obviously under the age of 40. Okay. But the theme is don't get fooled again. We have another conversation repeating what happened in the early Clinton years. If we fail again, if we get fooled again, we'll be set back for another decade and a half. First, the Republican model of health care, best summarized by the faux Republican Stephen Colbert. It's so simple. Most people who can't afford health insurance are also too poor to owe taxes, but if you give them a deduction from the taxes they don't owe, they can use the money they're not getting back to pay for the health care they can't afford. Okay. All right. Democratic frontrunners model, okay? Wait a minute, this guy's not a Democrat. Why is he up there? Well, the mandate model, what Karen's actually calling a mixed model, but the mandate model was actually originated by Richard Nixon. And the mandate model is that government uses its coercive power to force people to buy private health insurance. And Nixon in the early 70s designed the mandate model specifically to counter a move toward national health insurance led by then, well, still Senator Edward Kennedy. And the mandate model reform has been adopted and adapted by the Democratic frontrunners. And what it involves is an expanded Medicaid-like program, an expanded public program. You can call it Medicare, you can call it Medicaid. It's a public program, free for the poor, subsidies for low-income people, and a buy-in without subsidy for middle-income people. That's accompanied by an employer mandate. The universal part is the mandate part. We mandate there must be coverage. Employer mandate with or without an individual mandate. And then whereas Nixon called it managed care, the Democratic frontrunners are now calling it care management. Okay. The mandate model, there are some new aspects since Nixon. First of all, the individual mandate is present in Hillary and Edwards programs. It's also present in a lot of state proposals. There are promised cost savings through computerization. They now allow private HMOs and Medicare, and there's government brokerage of the private coverage, sometimes called FEHBP models, sometimes called insurance marts, but these new brokers. Now, what are the problems with mandate model? The key problem is there's no cost control, so the expanded coverage is unaffordable. Without cost control, expanded coverage is unaffordable. Because computers, care management, even prevention may sound good, and we love those things, but they have never been shown to lower costs. That is not cost control. In fact, the mandate models add administrative complexity and cost by retaining the wasteful private insurers. They have impeccable political logic. Impeccable political logic, as Karen and Lynn have been telling us, but they are economic nonsense. And don't take my word for it. Let's go a little bit deeper here. Impeccable political logic. This is if you stand in Cambridge where I live, look across the river in Boston. Two tallest buildings, the John Hancock Tower on your left, the Prudential Tower on your right. That's the political logic. Don't take these guys on. But the economic logic is they simply do not work because there's no cost control. And I'm not ideologically opposed to these things. That's not the problem. The problem is they've been tried and they failed. And they've been tried over and over in the states. We currently have in Massachusetts our new law, Governor Romney crowing about universal health care. It's based on a mandate. The New York Times saying the bill does what health experts say no other state has been able to do, provide a mechanism for all of its citizens to obtain health insurance. We heard this before in 1988. Governor Dukakis also had a mandate model. I'm very proud of the fact that Massachusetts will be the first state in the country to enact universal health care. New York Times again crowing. Massachusetts last week ventured where no state has gone before. It guaranteed health insurance for every resident. This is what has happened to the number of uninsured in Massachusetts. It's absolutely flat. We did not achieve universal health care either with the Dukakis bill, nor will we achieve it with the Romney bill. Because this is what's happened so far under the Romney bill, the individual mandate. The folks in the poorest part who got the free care, yes, half of them got coverage, though it's less exciting than it looks because many of them already had care through our free care pool. In the subsidized group, only 11% have gotten coverage. And in the largest group, the middle-income group, only 3% have gone out and bought the unsubsidized coverage. In order to get them in, they're going to have to criminalize being uninsured. And in fact, that is in the new law. When the full fines go into effect, being uninsured in Massachusetts will bring a $2,000 fine, which is a higher fine than I would get for violating child labor laws or beating my husband, okay? So they're going to criminalize being uninsured because you simply can't make it work otherwise. We've heard this before. Oregon, today our dreams of providing effective and affordable care to all Oregonians has come true. Again, a mandate law, the most far-reaching health reform in the nation, according to the Washington Post. Absolutely no progress in covering the uninsured. Tennessee, 1992, the most radical health plan in America. Tennessee will cover at least 95% of its citizens with health insurance by the end of 1994. Okay, again, really a flat line there. No improvement. Vermont, 1992. This is an incredibly exciting moment that should make all Vermonters proud, Governor Dean. Governor Dean, the New York Times says, the only governor who's a doctor signed a law here today that sets in motion a plan to give Vermont universal health care by 1995. Okay. Don't get fooled again. We've done these mixed models, mandate models. They just don't work. Washington State passed one of the most aggressive health care experiments in the nation, a program that will extend medical benefits to all 5.1 million residents of the state. Flat lines. Okay. Maine, again, same rhetoric, Maine DiRigo Health Plan. Again, a flat line. You cannot make an omelet without breaking the eggs. And these plans that try to include private insurance and use a mandate model simply don't work. On the other hand, let's ask the American people what they want, as has been done in this particular poll. Should the government provide a national health insurance program for all Americans, even if this would require higher taxes? And as of May 2007, nearly two-thirds of Americans said yes. So whatever we may hear about the process on the Hill, the majority of the American people are actually on board with the idea of government-funded universal health care, even if it involves raising taxes. Okay, so don't get fooled again. How do you tell phony from real health reform? Phony reform gives you a choice of an HMO and insurer. Real is a choice of clinician or hospital. Phony coverage is co-payments, deductibles, exclusions. You could still be bankrupt. Real coverage is first dollar comprehensive coverage and single payer. Phony security is you lose it if you can't work or can't pay. Real security means health insurance for everyone forever. That's what they have in other developed countries. Phony savings equal less care, and real savings equal what we calculate is over $300 billion in bureaucratic savings, not just on insurance companies, but the paperwork they foist on hospitals and doctors. So don't get fooled again. Learn from the past. I'll give you a little parable here. If you look at the slide, you can see what happened. Someone parked a little too close to the edge of the parking lot, but don't worry, the crane's here. Going to pull out the car. They got fooled again. They didn't find out what they did wrong. Okay. But don't worry, the bigger crane's here. Oops. Okay. Sorry, I've had to go through this very quickly. Most of this material, other than what's copyrighted or in press, will be up on the Physicians for National Health Program website. You can go to Michael Moore's Sicko website. It'll link you to ours. The SiccoCure.website, which is a website we've set up with Michael Moore, the California Nurses Association, the National Nurses Organizing Committee, and Physicians for a National Health Program.